Welcome to the Bogosity Podcast for the 12th of April, 2014. The podcast that's not Memorex. Yes, here we are, our first ever live public broadcast here on Spreecast.com. And I like it here. Nice decor. It's actually Sunday, April 11th, although I think at this point it's got to be the 12th in some parts of the world, so it counts. So this is your host, Shane Killian, and joining me today are Jacob Morris and Jonathan Lochey.
Hello. How's it going? Glad to be back.
All right. Also, look like we got Dave Turcotte down in the viewers, but he's not really joining us for some reason. I think something like he might be spending Mother's Day with his mother or something ridiculous like that. So maybe he's just watching. Yeah, so we were actually doing it live this time. Yeah, because we had that aborted attempt a couple weeks ago to do it live when it turns out the YouTube channel got screwed up. I'm proud to announce that all that's been cleared up. The YouTube channel's fine, and we can have videos longer than 15 minutes again and things like that. So that should be taken care of. All right, well, I have to start our first live public broadcast with something a bit embarrassing, because last time I got something wrong. And it doesn't happen often, but when it does, I want to make sure it's corrected. Somehow, I got the idea that Ron Paul had endorsed Robert Sarvis for governor of Virginia. And thinking back, I have absolutely no idea where I got that information from, because it's completely wrong. He endorsed Ken Cuccinelli, and he said it would actually be insane to vote for Sarvis. And the thing that made it really embarrassing is that the story we were covering said that, and I missed it. I read the story twice, and somehow I missed it twice. So that's not my best moment. I'm grateful to Jeffrey Gruntz for pointing out this hideous blunder.
So we all roll one sometime.
Yeah. So let me wipe the egg off my face, and we'll cover the news of the bogus. And since it's live, we can actually take viewer questions. So if you got any questions or comments about the story we're covering, I think we lost Jonathan again. So we'll take those at the end of each segment, and then if you have any questions about whatever, we'll take those at the end before we do Biggest Bogon Emitter and any lingering questions we might save for the very end. So please look directly under the Spreecast video, put in your viewers and suggestions. I'm putting the URL in for our first story right now. And it looks like Jonathan's gone completely, so I think it's just you and me, Jacob. All right, so for our first story, did you know the recession ended 5 years ago? Did you notice that?
Really?
You know, I think people who say that... I think people who say that must be sitting...
Well, I guess my tone doesn't really hit that hard.
Oh, okay. I think for the most part, people who say that are sitting in an ivory tower smoking cigars that they lit with $100 bills. They can't be any of the millions of people looking for work. They can't be any of the tens of millions of people who have given up looking for work. And I certainly don't think they're anyone who's tried to run a small business during that time. Well, now Zero Hedge has an article, 17 Facts to Show to Anyone That Still Believes That the U.S. Economy is Just Fine, by Tyler Durden. So, now we're all skeptics here, so I think we know that in any given economy you can find some reasons why it's doing well and some reasons why it's doing badly, but these 17 things, they're pretty big and pretty fundamental, so, yeah, it doesn't really smack of any cherry picking. They're all things that are pretty fundamental, so I thought fairly quickly, we don't have time to go over these in detail, but I thought just fairly quickly we go over these 17 things. And the first one is that the home ownership rate in the United States has dropped to its lowest level in 19 years.
How about that?
Mm-hmm. After the Fed, you know, keep trying to keep the home values pushing up and giving all that go, oh, we got to get people in homes, we got to get people in homes. That's what they've been doing for the last decade or more. We got to get people in homes, and now fewer people are in homes than have been in two decades, so.
Mission accomplished.
I think it's like Milton Friedman said, if you put government in charge of the Sahara Desert in 5 years, you'll have a shortage of sand. Now, let's see if we can get John back on. Hello, John, are you back?
Okay.
Ah, okay, there you are. Are you there, John? I can see you, but I can't hear you.
Okay, hear me now?
Yeah, I think I might have to turn it up a little bit.
Okay, give me one sec. Can you hear me now?
I'm hearing you pretty good now.
Okay.
All right, so we're going over
this.
What's that?
I ended up having to... Good old comm crap. I guess they decided to throttle my internet once I got on here. I had to reboot the router and put my VPN on.
Oh, yeah. Did you get BoxPN?
I did end up getting them.
Yeah, they work great, don't they? I've been using
them. I haven't got any more copyright notices for downloading Game of Thrones.
We'll pretend not to have heard that. If they come asking, we heard nothing. But I think it's great because I've noticed that when I upload to YouTube, I'll get the full speed for about a couple of minutes, and then Charter apparently just throttles it way down. When I go through BoxPN, it works fine, so I really like them. Unfortunately, they don't have an affiliate program, so I can't give you a deal on it or anything, but they're good. I highly recommend them. They're like $3 a month or something like that. Okay, so anyway.
Yeah, I think I end up paying like $30.
Yeah. It's really good. So we were at number 2. Consumer spending for durable goods has dropped 3.23% since November. And durable goods are non-perishable things that are like cars, household items, cell phones, things you don't use up quickly, as opposed to soft goods, which are food, cosmetics, etc. And those are things that people have to keep buying, so... No matter what, you gotta buy food, you gotta eat, but durable goods, you can kinda put off purchasing those, you can kinda go with what you've got for a while. So, spending on durable goods dropping is really a sign that the economy is not doing that well.
Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to point out something, to number one while I was dealing with my issues.
Okay.
I recently bought a condo. Actually, damn near almost been a year now. Wow. Time flies. But anyway, somebody who's wanting home ownership in my age range, probably the best deal you can get is like a foreclosed condo. You can get one of those for under $80,000.
Yeah.
But here's the catch. All those foreclosed condos, almost none of them qualify for FHA housing, so you gotta come up with 20%. So what
that's
would be, you know,
catch,
a good deal?
There?
Mm-hmm. I'll get you. You know? So that's I think that's especially my age range. A lot of people who could buy one, they just simply can't. So.
Yeah. But, I mean, the price is going to have to come down. That's the only way you get market clearing. Let the price go down so people can afford it. And, of course, the Fed's doing the exact opposite. They just keep pushing the price up, up, up.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so number 3, major retailers are closing stores at the fastest pace that we've seen since the collapse of Lehman Brothers. Now, I don't know how much mm-hmm. of that is just the fact that it's being replaced by online purchases at Amazon and other places, but...
I believe it. yeah, there is... there's one big mall in Jacksonville, Regency Square Mall, and it was at one time, I mean, we're talking about this was the largest mall in the state of Florida and probably did more business than anywhere between Miami... and or Atlanta, and there is nobody there left. We're talking about 2.5 million square mile or square foot mall with maybe 10 stores, and even the city is like big. Like I think the city offered like however many millions of dollars to IKEA to level part of it and build a store there, And they said no. So. Yeah. So. I think, like I said, it's partly online and just partially, I think, consumer spending habits. There's just not the disposable income there once was.
Right. People aren't making the extra purchases. Number four, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, 20% of all families in the United States do not have a single member that is employed. So not even, you know, the teenage kid having a part-time job down at the local Greasy Spoon. Not even that. One in five families, no one is working at all.
Now, these days, it seems like you need a bachelor's degree just to drop the fries at McDonald's.
But, I mean, they're still looking for, like, machinists and welders and things like that. You know, the skilled labor, and they're having trouble finding those. It's just ridiculous.
Oh, heck. I think I noticed, you know, my best friend, you know, me, I sort of went the traditional route, you know, graduated, top of my class, went to school, blah, 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 blah. I had a half decent job, but whatever. My buddy, he dropped out of his senior year of high school. Didn't get his GED until about 6 months ago. But for the last 2 years, he's been making six figures welding in a peanut farm in North Carolina.
Wow. Where is that peanut farm? I could learn welding.
It's like somewhere in between. It's like halfway between 95 and the ocean. It's right out in the middle of nowhere.
Way out there, yeah.
I can learn welding.
So, number five, there are 1.3 million fewer jobs in the U.S. economy than when the recession began in December 2007. And the article says, meanwhile, our population has continued to grow steadily since that time. I looked it up. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, in December 2007, the U.S. population was 302 million. May 2014, the estimated population is 318 million. So there are 1.3 million fewer jobs for 16 million more people.
Yeah. You know, what? Not to mention, this is, it really hurts, like I said, either somebody my or Jacob's generation just coming into the job market, it's harder to get that foot in the door. But also, I mean, you're also looking at sort of, like I said, some in our parents' generation. You know, if you were just some sad sack there to collect a paycheck, you're out on your butt too.
Yeah. So number six, according to a new report from the National Employment Law Project, the quality of jobs that have been created since the end of the recession do not match the quality of jobs lost. So lower wage industries were 22% of recession losses, but 44% of recovery growth. Mid-wage industries were 37% of recession losses, but only 26% of recovery growth, and higher wage was 41% of recession losses and 30% of recovery growth.
I believe it. I know here locally, the two main industries that sort of fueled the city before the crash happened was construction. And we were a big hub for insurance. So, which two industries were hit the worst?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. It's...
Well, and they want to raise...
Yeah,
the,
so everybody lost...
Yeah.
And, raise the minimum wage.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Raise the minimum wage and destroy the lower income jobs, which are the ones that are being created the most. You know, that ought to work out great.
I order Mickey D's would probably be more accurate from the from the kiosk.
All right. Number seven, after adjusting for inflation, men who work full-time in America today make less money than men who worked full-time in America 40 years ago. And, of course, a lot of that is because of that very same inflation. Number eight. 62% of all Americans make $20 or less an hour at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Number nine of the top 10 occupations in the U.S. pay an average wage of less than $35,000 a year. Number 10, the middle class in Canada now makes more money than the middle class in the United States does.
No, I'm moving.
Number 11, according to one recent study, 40% of all Americans could not come up with $2,000 right now, even if there was a major emergency. I know what that feels like. Also, number 12.
That's right.
Also, number 12, less than...
I got one credit card, 20... I got one credit card with like a $5,000 limit that I keep, that I never use just for that, but yeah, in terms of cash, hell no.
They're better than I am. I got a couple of credit cards, and I put like gas on them, and I pay them off every month so I don't get interest. But yeah, I still don't think it's $2,000.
Yeah.
I'd have to cash out part of my IRA for that. Number 12, less than one out of every four Americans has enough money put away to cover 6 months of expenses if there was a job loss or major emergency. And I got to tell you, 6 months of expenses has become quite a big chunk of change. Number 13, an astounding 56% of all Americans have subprime credit in 2014, and I think we all know who's to blame for that. Number 14, 49 million Americans are dealing with food insecurity. Number 15, 10 years ago, the number of women in the U.S. that had jobs outnumbered the number of women in the U.S. on food stamps by more than a 2-to-1 margin. Now, the number of women on food stamps exceeds the number of women who have jobs. So, haven't heard any feminists pointing that one out. But that's a big issue.
Yeah, you know, I'm
thought.
It's one of those where I think if they were really savvy, that's one of the things they'd be hitting. It's one of the things they should be hitting.
That, I mean, that's just, like I said, too, and how much of it is people who dual income earners who are now single income earners all of a sudden now qualify for food stamps.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's one of those things that can muck up the...
Sad.
Yeah, that's one of those things that can muck up the statistics, though, because if you have a married couple, and let's say they make $40,000 each, so they have a household making $80,000, they're above the median, they get divorced, they move to two separate households. Even if, let's say, they both get raises to $45,000, even if they're making more money than they were before, they went from one household above the median to two households below the median, and that's one of the things you have to keep in mind when you're parsing all of these economic statistics. You know, when they talk about, oh, look what the median income's done, look what the household income's done. Well, you got to look at things like the makeup of the households, things like that. All right, number 16, 69% of the federal budget is spent either on entitlements or on welfare programs. 69%.
Everybody's got to get theirs.
Mm. Over two-thirds, yeah.
Where's my free money?
You don't qualify. You're not in a protected group, I guess. Number 17, and we covered this one before, the numbers of Americans receiving benefits from the federal government exceeds the number of full-time workers in the private sector by more than 60 million. We talked about that a few weeks ago. So, Tyler Durden...
Yeah. You know what?
Yeah?
Oh, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Okay. So, Tyler Durden goes on to say, quote, "It is getting worse each passing month. The food bank I help out has barely squeaked by in the last 3 months. Donors are having to pull back to take care of their own families. Wages down, prices up. Simple math tells you we cannot hold out much longer. Things are going up so fast, you have to adopt a new way of thinking. Example, I just had to put new tires on my truck. Normally I would have tried to get by till next winter, but with the way prices are moving, I decided to get them while I could still afford them. It's the same way with food. I see nothing that will stop the upward trend for quite a while, so if you have a little money and the space, buy it while you can afford it, and never forget, there will be some people worse off than you. Help them if you can. Which is a good message, but it's a disturbing trend if a lot of people feel that way, because if you study things like the Weimar Republic and about the hyperinflation, that's what does it. People think, oh, I can't hold on to my money. I got to buy something now, before the prices go up, and that just accelerates everything.
Well, the bank of
I know that's, you know, that's the thing it's said, but, you know, pretty much, that's the thing is, like, when I go to the grocery store now, unless it's buy one, get one, or I got a good coupon on something, I almost never buy anything else.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and you can find coupons and find online deals and things like that.
I mean, that's, you know, that's, was it the, I opened, I know it's Whole Foods, but still I got the flyer from Whole Foods in the mail the other day, and they were touting their T-bone steak was on sale for $16.99 a pound.
Too rich for my blood.
Yeah.
Of course, that's $16.99. A pound is a lot of steak, you know, because you get a steak and it's like 8 ounces or something like that. All right, so I think we should move on to the next one. And we've talked about net neutrality before, and we've talked about the problems that it causes. Well, an article in the Umlaut is talking about why it will hurt the poor in addition to all of the other problems that we've talked about. And so the idea is, he talks about having like a Walmart brand of scotch. Well, you know, it sounds disgusting, but if there's no Walmart brand of scotch, then that just means that there are people at the bottom who can't afford the scotch. So, and what he says is, mm-hmm. quote, "Rules that remove low-quality scotch from the marketplace make those people work off. It's true the rules may protect those who only want high-quality scotch, go to the store and buy any bottle. If mediocre scotch is banned, then any bottle you pick will be a good one, but this protection for the rich is provided at the expense of the poor. Before we ban low-quality products from the marketplace, we might, as they say, check our privilege."
Mm-hmm. Let's see here.
But it's interesting. He points out that there are actually benefits in many parts of the world to the net not being neutral. For example, he talks about Facebook Zero, and this gives customers of 50 different carriers, mostly in the developing world, access to this lightweight version of Google at no charge. They don't pay any data access for using Facebook Zero. They can post, like, poke, comments. It's only if they want to do things like view photos or access other sites or things like that, then they start incurring data charges. But as long as they stick to those functions, no charge at all. So that's something that's not network neutrality at all, that actually helps people who otherwise wouldn't be able to afford getting on Facebook at all because of the data charges.
Yeah. Well, you know, ultimately this always comes down to where does this net neutrality always lead us to? Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all right, granted, yes, Comcast is an evil mega corporation that only exists thanks to billions of dollars in donors to the government. Fine. But if Netflix is such a huge part of Comcast traffic, I have no problem with them wanting to charge Netflix for premium use.
Well, and the big problem, you know, was it wasn't so much Comcast traffic, it was how much, because Comcast and other ISPs, when they go out onto the internet backbone, they pay the carriers of the internet, but they have to pay to get onto that, and they incur data charges when they do that. And the way that they solved it, and everyone says, well, you know, now Netflix is paying for the privilege of connecting up. Well, yeah, in a sense, that's true. But what happened is, apparently, Netflix put one of their data center computers directly on Comcast's network. And, of course, when you do that, when you have a hosting server, you pay the ISP just like everyone else. Both ends pay. But now, since that Netflix server is on Comcast's network, those packets can be delivered to Comcast customers without leaving their network. They don't have to go out onto the internet backbone and incur all those extra charges. So I think that was a pretty good solution. I mean, not perfect by any means.
But I have to pay a dollar more a month so that my kids can watch SpongeBob.
Yeah, something that didn't exist 10 years ago, and now we can't do without it. Then Google started up with the same kind of thing, a Google free zone, basically meaning you can do searches with no data charges. Of course, when you actually go to the websites, you get a charge. Wikimedia Foundation also did Wikipedia Zero. And so what he says is, quote, "You may think that walled garden access to Facebook or Google is inferior to neutral internet access, and you'd be right. But if the neutralistas got their way, people in developing countries wouldn't have better internet access. Many of them would have nothing." Wikimedia notes that in Kenya, mobile service costs can exceed 25% of monthly income. Additionally, 1 in 5 have reported that they will forego an unusual expenditure, such as food, in order to reload phone credit. Low-quality free internet access, therefore, is part of the optimal stock of internet access. So with network neutrality, all that would just be gone out the window. He also mentioned that Kindle has included 3G service. They made some kind of deal with the carriers that if you have a Kindle, you can just use 3G service and not pay any kind of monthly fee for it. So, really, I think the problem comes down to is if the problem is all these cable monopolies and we need net neutrality to stop the cable monopolies from doing this, why not just end the cable monopolies? I mean, they're only there because of these deals with the government anyway.
That was more a
shame that... I mean, this is like I said, I make this argument, everyone just keeps flipping their minds about the Time Warner and Comcast merger. There was never any competition between these two to begin with.
Yeah. I mean, it's like on one side of the
media market.
On one side of a borderline, you can get Comcast but not Time Warner. On the other side of the line, you can get Time Warner but not Comcast. And where, how is that competing?
Find me one household in America that had the option between getting the internet from either Comcast or Time Warner or cable from Comcast or Time Warner.
I think there are a few places where they have a choice of like two or three different cable providers, and of course their costs have gone way down and they don't have problems like this.
Is it cable or is it good? I have four choices, basically. I have Comcast, I have UVerse, Dish, and DirecTV. But the only one that can actually go through the cable jack is Comcast.
Yeah, for UVerse, they'd have to run... I think UVerse, they run a fiber, don't they? But see, we don't have that here.
Actually, the one person in my condo who has it, it actually runs through their phone line.
Oh, really? I was thinking it was a fiber service. But anyway, but like with the satellite, you've got a problem because the satellites are way up in the Clark Belt, something like 23,000 miles away, just because of the speed of light. By the time the signal gets up there and back down, you've added like half a second or something of latency on there, and that's especially problematic for stuff like internet gaming, so that's not any real kind of competition, you know, to the high-speed, low-latency connection like what I have here that's giving me this wonderful 97% here on Spreecast. So, I mean, if we just took all this energy that people are putting into net neutrality and put it into ending these cable monopolies, you know, imagine how far we could go with that.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so the Benghazi attacks are back in the news, sort of, the ones who will actually condescend to actually report on it. And I hate to break it to you, you might want to be sitting down for this. The Obama administration lied. Such a shock.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
It was never.
And a lot of this has come to light thanks from Cheryl Atkinson. She used to be a reporter with CBS up until her bosses at CBS wanted her to drop the story, and she refused, and that was a little over a month ago. So now there's all these emails that were finally released through the I think it was Judicial Watch that got them through the Freedom of Information Act. And, I mean, they just show everything about how the Obama administration was desperate to spin the story about it being a reaction to a YouTube video, which was pretty much bogus from the start. It had clearly been planned long before that, and how they could spin it into a way that it didn't look like their foreign policy was an abysmal failure. And so what Atkinson says is, quote, "If we knew everything then that we know now, 1 week after it happened, I think that would have been really devastating to Obama's reelection campaign." Which is why they wanted to delay it, of course.
Nice going, Barry.
She also said, quote, "As one whistleblower put it to me, things have never been worse for people who try to speak the truth inside the government about illegalities and wrongdoing. In their view, and I tend to agree, every administration is more clamped down and closed than the one before it, and the next one starts at the finishing point. It's very hard to make it go backwards. There are rules being implemented now against journalists and the type of work that we do that I think will be very hard to unwind."
First Amendment is great, unless you're talking about the government.
Mm-hmm. You've noticed that, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, and she complains about the news media's liberal bias. I think that misses the point. I don't think they have a liberal bias per se. I think they have a pro-government bias is what it is. And they just kind of blindly go along with whatever the government says. I mean, just like they weren't critical about the Iraq war. You know, they let easily verifiable things like the whole aluminum tubes things just kind of go by, and they didn't even question it. You know, even though it was all publicly available information.
Yeah, it's not even at the national level. It was sort of a...
You there, John?
Pro-government news on the other night, and... It's just, yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah, you're breaking up on us.
What?
Me?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just breaking up
say,
a little bit.
There isn't even... Ooh, 12%. Let's see here.
If other people in your house are watching Netflix, okay, you might want to have them cut it off or something. All right, you're up to 39%
now. Anyway.
Okay.
What I was going to say was there's this big fight still going on over food trucks in my city.
Right.
And like the guy was saying, you know, it's a lot harder to set up a food truck here in Jacksonville versus anywhere else in the city, or any other major city in Florida. Yeah, basically, in like Orlando or Tampa, you can pretty much set up anywhere as long as you're paying the parking meter or the wherever you're at doesn't give a shit. You know, but, and they've actually done a lot to help downtown, more than about $2 billion in the last decade of taxpayer money has. But the news media is like, oh, it's hurting downtown businesses. The government knows what's best.
Mm-hmm. It's hurting the businesses that keep lobbying the government, giving them campaign donations and everything else. They're little political cronies there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we can't let a kid have a hot dog stand to help cover the expenses of his disabled parents. No, we have to make them all homeless.
Yeah. And then give them food stamps. I think what I say again, big government in action is truest form. A homeless man can apply and get his EBT card within 2 days. Why is he homeless? Because he tried to get a business, and the business and the agency in charge of business licenses has a 6-month backlog.
Yeah. Oh, but when it comes to entitlements, they're on the ball with that. Yeah, those aren't like candy. Mm-hmm. All right, and now it's time to dart off without paying for this week's biggest bogon emitter. And the fact of the matter is, taxis in most cities are just like what you were talking about, Jonathan. They're heavily corporatized, if not outright monopolies. But there are two companies trying to give them some much-needed competition, Lyft, that's L-Y-F-T, and Uber. You might have seen a John Stossel covering those on his show.
I've used Uber before. I like them.
Okay, yeah, that's cool. Yeah, because what they do is all the drivers are on the internet, and you can request, you know, which driver you want. And all the drivers are rated by all the different customers. And then the customers are rated by the driver. So there's all this crowdsourcing about who's the most reliable and so on. So you, you know, call for a Lyft, and then the guy, I think it's Lyft that has that big pink mustache in front of the cars, and
that
car comes by and it gets you a Lyft, and it's pretty cool. Well, there's been a problem. Apparently, city governments acting on behalf of their corporate masters to help take down the competition in Madison, Wisconsin, and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, undercover operations have been put into place to systematically target these drivers and issue them citations totaling thousands of dollars. So what's happening is, because anyone can call these things. The undercover police officers get on there, they hail a ride, and when the driver shows up, they cite them. Or a lot of times they don't even do that. They go through the whole ride, they pay for it, say, and they smile and they're friendly, and then they mail them a citation. And a lot of these have been fined $300 or even sometimes up to $1,300 for individual drivers.
Mm. Yeah, they, Uber first came into the market here, they actually, there's a, one cab company sort of owns the roost here in Jacksonville. They're called Gator City. I've only ever done one of their cabs once because the driver who had it had like his dog in the car with him and it reeked of marijuana. So, but with Uber, I mean, it has been, they're always fast, reliable, etc. So I guess they tried, the city council tried to pass something that if, you had to have like a minimum of 15 cars in your fleet or something, and Uber only had 12 at the time.
Yeah, you can't be a small business. You gotta be one of the big guys.
No.
We gotta put those barriers to entry up. The Madison Police Captain Richard Bach said, quote, "There needed to be enforcement action taken to send a message that the city was not going to tolerate their operation without licensing." I guess it's nice that they've taken care of all the murderers and rapists and everything and making alphabets on this.
Message taken, words not to listen to.
Yeah. He also said, quote,
"Message taken, no more than this.
There is a potential that there could be more enforcement action in the future." Now, explain this to me. How is this not extortion? I mean, can you imagine if, like, the mob did this? All the crimes they would be, you know, committing and everything they could be arrested and put in jail for?
Hey, somebody's got to pay for these police officers' pensions.
Yeah, it's not extortion when the government does it.
Yeah. Different rules for thee than for me. And there's another rideshare company, Sidecar, that's received similar citations in Philadelphia and New York. And the thing is, through it all, they're all saying things like, oh, well, we wish we could work out a compromise. We're willing to work with them to help them become compliant. But why should they? They're not doing anything that harms anyone else. They're providing this public service that people pay for and like, and they keep going on the website and saying, yeah, I like this. This is right. I'm going to do some more of it. Just, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
They're not endangering the public or anything.
But they're unlicensed, Shane. How can we possibly know?
Yeah, because that magic piece of paper from the government does so much. So, of course, these undercover police officers and the people giving them their orders are absolutely this week's biggest bogey emitter. And now it's time to put egg on the face of this week's
Idiot Extraordinaire!
Dave isn't on to call me a sorcerer this week. Alright. So, the NYPD apparently wanted to do something to boost their image, you know, connect to the public or whatever. It's a publicity stunt. They called upon New York City residents to tweet pictures of themselves with police officers using the hashtag MyNYPD. What could possibly go wrong?
Here we go.
So the original tweet read, "Do you have a photo with a member of the NYPD? Tweet us and tag it, hashtag MyNYPD. It may be featured on our Facebook." Somehow, I have a feeling that a lot of these weren't. Because one of them said something like, "Need a lift? The NYPD's got you. Free delivery only at my NYPD." And it's a picture of, you know, four police officers carrying a guy off. And another one, another one says, "So, when a girl swipes again..." Which one?
"Here, the NYPD engaged with its community members, changing the hearts and minds one baton swipe at a time. My NYPD."
Yeah. This one is, "So, when a girl swipes you in, you get jumped by five cops and cuffed." And so it's, yeah, they're all like three or four of them. And then another one, it's weird. It says, "Every white shirt has to get in on the brutality, right? My NYPD, hashtag." And, you know, it's hard to tell. These are photographs, so they're just a snapshot in time, so who knows what's going on. But there's this woman that they're restraining, and there's this one cop over the side who's kind of reaching over them, like specifically just to grab her hair. Like, yeah, really, he's helping out a whole lot there.
Yeah, great school. That one, or one with this cop, he's got his knee into a guy's throat. He's like, "Want the have a kink in your neck? The NYPD will take care of that for you, free of charge."
Yeah, they now offer chiropractic services. What is this one with the police motorcycle and the guy's lying on the ground and it looks like he's half running over him, half kicking him in the groin or something? What's going on there?
Respect my authority?
That's kicking the groin. More cool. That's long.
Yeah.
I have children.
Oh, and there's one of those that I think we covered. There's a video of this. I've actually seen it online, and they posted a frame of it. A homeless person was sleeping in a synagogue, and the NYPD came in and just gave him a complete butt kicking. Oh, here's one. Need a mammogram? Hashtag MyNYPD has got you covered. Forget Obamacare. And they're trying to restrain this woman, and guess where all their hands are? Yeah. Oh, we had to grab her there to restrain her.
It's like that scene in Ghostbusters. All the hands are covering that lady.
Oh, yeah, when Sigourney Weaver's character.
Yeah.
And that one hand... Right.
Yeah.
That was her husband, by the way.
Yes.
That was her husband's hand doing that. And he didn't tell that he was going to do that, so really got her by surprise. So, I mean, there were a few, well, more than a few really commenting on this. There was one that says, "If you want to see a social media campaign going awry, check the hashtag MyNYPD hashtag. Oh, man." Another one is, "So not one person from the NYPD communications department foresaw the obvious backlash this MyNYPD hashtag would bring, LOL." Another one is, "If anyone needs a lesson in the importance of thinking through a social media strategy before rolling it out, see hashtag MyNYPD now for examples."
What can you say?
So after all that, who else was going to be this week's
Idiot Extraordinaire!
Well, that wraps up this Throw Him to the Floor edition of the Bogosity Podcast. Please visit the forums at bogosity.tv, where you can read the show notes and join the discussion on these and other subjects. This podcast is free but not free to produce, so please donate via PayPal or Bitcoin at the top of the bogosity.tv website or down the right-hand side of the podcast page and give generously to keep this podcast going. And if you'd like to contribute to the podcast, just send a question, statement, news article, or rant to podcast@bogosity.tv. Put it in an audio file, and if it's good enough, it'll get played right in the podcast. Thanks again to my panel for joining me. That's you guys.
Great to be back.
Yeah. Yeah, we've had a lot of lag here. I think that's kind of thrown off our timing here. There's way more lag here than there is on Skype. All right, and of course, thank you all for listening. Until next time, here's a quote from Buckminster Fuller. "The end move in politics is to pick up a gun." The Bogosity Podcast is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 3.0 Imported License.
Kind of like Step on the Peter Schiff radio. Peter Schiff radio.